Some Christians wonder if boycotting businesses is really biblical, and that's a fair question. Ed Battagliano and M.D. Perkins address that subject in depth in the AFA Cultural Institute video, Stewardship in Action, The Power of the Boycott. They share the purpose of boycotts and show how they can impact the culture. We're giving that DVD to you free as our thanks for supporting AFA this month. Go to afa.net today for more details. afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Battagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Tuesday, October 14th. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
G'day, sir.
G'day. Chris Woodward joins us. Good morning.
I would say hello in like a Dick Van Dyke British accent, but I don't want to offend A, the British, or B, our listeners. So hello. Good morning.
That was kind of a long explanation of why you weren't doing something.
We are lucky the Brits didn't invade us again after Dick Van Dyke tried to be a British person in Mary Poppins.
You know, you didn't like his performance in Mary Poppins?
I did not.
The original?
I did not.
I always liked that movie.
The movie is better than the book. I can say that. Rarely do you find the movie better than the book, but in my opinion that nobody asked for this morning, the movie is better than the book.
Tim Wildman is out of town this week. That's why I'm in the captain's chair. He's actually taking a tour group to Boston.
Boston?
Boston. I'm wondering what the weather, the weather updates there? Weren't they getting hit by a big storm?
Oh, yeah. The last couple of days, it has not been nice in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that storm, I think, system has moved off now, so it should be pretty nice.
All right.
Yeah. 52 currently.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good weather. I just saw someone in the hallway, by the way, and Jeff Wagner, who works here with us. And as I was coming down the stairs from my office to come here to the studio, I heard Jeff in the where we have a couple ladies who answer phones and greet people when they come in to the kind of entrance to the building. But Jeff was talking about cannolis and fresh Italian bread, and I got my hopes up. I thought someone had opened that a bakery or something here in the Tupelo area. So, folks, if you're listening, that's where our flagship station, our headquarters, is located, even though we're in 36 states with our radio network. And so I stopped coming here to the studio, and I said, please tell me. And he said, no, I was in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
And he was – and, of course, the bigger cities you're going to get – Not just for Italian food, probably all kinds of ethnic foods. You get the real deal, as it were.
You can start you a little small business, Eddie's or something.
Eddie's. Listen, I have actually thought about doing that, but I'm not a businessman, so it would very soon go out of business.
A lot of business owners are not businessmen either, but yes.
Anyway, I was disappointed. You've lived in big cities, Fred.
Yeah, Toronto I loved. There's a couple of main streets in Toronto, Yonge and Bloor. And along Bloor, anybody who's been to Toronto probably have been on Bloor. But you walk along and you have the Italian bakeries.
Oh, my goodness.
And I used to walk just for that. That smell.
Just the smell.
The fresh bread. And there's Greek sections, Asian sections down further south in the city. I just love the cultural mix.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Same thing with Vancouver.
Yeah.
The cultural mix is just absolutely wonderful.
And you don't realize that people sometimes ask me, because I married a Mississippi girl, and my kids, born and raised. And I've lived in Mississippi since 1985, long period of time. And people will ask, what do you miss about Boston and New England? And I always say, it is these family-owned restaurants.
Yes.
And then real bakeries and real delis. And I miss all that. And there are people listening who are in big cities, and they know what we're talking about. So, anyway.
Got you on food.
Now I'm just really discouraged and disappointed. So, all right, Chris, I'll tell you what. I know there's going to be some good news here.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'll begin with positive news. from Israel, where a lot of news outlets, pretty much since last night, certainly early this morning when I came in to do the Rusty Pugh shift, a lot of news outlets have done stories on the reunions between people that were being held hostage by Hamas, Israelis I'm talking about, now back with their loved ones in the nation of Israel. Trey Yingst, for the first 30 minutes or so of Fox News Channel's Fox and Friends program this morning, they spent about 30 minutes talking with Trey Yingst about all kinds of things involving Israel and this peace deal, phase two. I'll get to some of that in a second. But let's begin with some positive news. Here is Trey Yingst talking about hostages being released and the reunions. Clip one.
A joyous day as 20 living hostages were released from Hamas captivity. Also, the bodies of four others returned to Israel for a proper burial. We have gotten the names from the Israeli military of two of those hostages who were returned in coffins. Bipin Joshi from Nepal, he was working near the border during the October 7th massacre, and Guy Iluz, who was a sound technician attending the Nova Music Festival. Overnight, President Trump wrapped up his trip to the Middle East with a summit in Egypt where he signed the Gaza ceasefire deal that allowed the release of these hostages. It was a day of celebration on Monday with so many reunions, former hostages meeting their families again after more than 2 years. We do expect to get more updates on their health conditions today from local hospitals.
Well, I do want to point out, and this is good news, getting these hostages back. I do want to point out, yesterday I think we mentioned that there were no women hostages released. Those were the news reports that everyone was given. Mm-hmm. So there was one woman released, I think.
Yes.
With the hostages. But this is, Fred, this is good news. This is, I know we're going to hear some more sound with regards to President Trump's role in it. But I was just looking at a story here on American Family News. You go to AFN.net, folks, for great news from a Christian perspective. But the Egyptian president was saying that Trump's Middle East proposal is the, quote, last chance for peace in the region. It is a first step that has been taken in the 20-step peace plan. There's a lot of pessimism out there. I know we're going to talk about some of the things that Hamas is continuing to do, but this is a good first step. We mentioned this yesterday, and President Trump deserves a lot of credit for it.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, to underline that, able to watch the whole lot of videos as the families were being reunited with their sons and husbands in some cases, all that sort of thing. Pardon me. There was one particular reunion, and this involved a guy who was a hostage. And you may remember back a few months ago, Hamas took a picture of him. He was digging his own grave.
Yeah.
Remember that picture? Well, he was one of the hostages released. And the video showed him reuniting with his mom. And you can't help, Martha McCollum, one of the Fox hosts yesterday, had tears in her eyes. You can't help this.
Right.
When you see and you realize what these families have been through for 2 years, not knowing, number one, whether their kids have survived.
Yeah.
Or husbands. But also the day-by-day getting your hopes up, because some of the hostages were released over the last 2 years.
Yes.
And you can imagine, you know, maybe it's my son today.
Yeah.
And it's not. And then, you know, this particular mom saw the picture of her son digging his own grave, supposedly, there by Hamas. But I want to draw attention to this particular mom when she was weeping, and heartfelt, depth-felt, gut-felt,
yeah,
weeping. But also I looked at her face and the deep ding rings under her eyes.
Yeah.
This is a mom who probably hasn't slept very much for 2 years.
Right.
So it was absolutely an incredible moment. So there are not too many people. Maybe we'll talk about one reporter in particular. But there's not too many people that are disagreeing. This is an incredible moment yesterday. Now, moving on just hours afterwards when President Trump flew to Egypt for this summit to talk about the next parts of this peace deal. I don't think anybody is under any illusions that everything's going to be okay. It's not. This story that you just referenced on AFN.net, it speaks of the Turkish President Erdogan. And he said he wasn't going to be part of that Egyptian summit yesterday if Prime Minister Netanyahu was there. In fact, while these discussions were going on, Erdogan's plane was circling over this Red Sea resort because he really said, I'm not going to land this airplane until I'm sure that Netanyahu isn't there.
That much hatred.
That much hatred. Israel. Because Turkey was one of those countries, along with Qatar, that was playing host to Hamas terrorist leaders.
Yes.
All right? So that hatred is still there. And if anybody thinks what happened yesterday, that hatred's going away, it's not. So this is, it gets real complicated from this point on in this. You know, is Hamas going to give up its arms? As of this morning, we had reports of gunfire between Israeli soldiers and Hamas. We have reports this morning of Hamas.
Israeli soldiers and Hamas?
Okay. Yes. We have reports this morning of Hamas executing in the streets of Gaza opposition tribes that are still there in Gaza. So less than 24 hours, the unrest is back. And so, you know, we pray that the next steps will happen.
Right.
Because nobody wants the horrors of what's been going on in the Middle East for so long. But at the same time, we have to be realistic. These tensions, it's been going on for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, President Trump at one point yesterday was talking about, you know, almost like this ends the bitter disputes over the last thousands of years. No, it doesn't. It's not going to go away. And, you know, Israel is very clear. Prime Minister Netanyahu is very clear. At the end of the day, he says, Israel will make sure its border is secure. Despite all of the diplomacy and the various country leaders talking about this and that, and it's Israel at the end of the day, Netanyahu is saying, we are responsible for securing our border.
Well, I will say this. Westerners operate under their own worldview.
Yes.
And this includes President Trump. Mm. President Trump is one of these kind of individuals who thinks that people will act based on what's in their best interest, because that is his experience as a builder, you know, entrepreneur, you know, wealthy and successful businessman, president. He believes, and most Westerners do, that that what would be best for the Palestinian people in Gaza is peace.
Yeah.
And let's rebuild Gaza City, and let's make that, as President Trump has said, let's just make that a wonderful place, you know, where people will where tourism will thrive. But ever since 9/11 in this country, many people in the West, and again here in the United States, don't want to admit the facts on the ground, which is that this radical Islamic ideology, and I don't think it has to be all that radical. This is Islamic, the Islamic worldview, cannot allow Israel to remain.
Yes.
That is why Hamas, they changed the wording of their charter, but their original charter said, we exist to eliminate Israel. And we all hope for a break.
Yeah.
I think that, to me, is the best we can hope for, is a break. Maybe you can rebuild. Maybe the people of Gaza will say, enough with the Hamas. We want leaders that are, you know, like in Jordan, that understand Israel's not going anywhere. Israel's armed to the teeth. Their technological superiority is going to help them in a lot of military conflicts. They have nuclear weapons. Sane people will realize, even if you believe that Islam is going to triumph, which Spoiler alert, folks, it's not.
No.
even if you believe it will, you know you're not going to push Israel into the sea without losing your own capital. Mm-hmm. That goes for every country that surrounds Israel. But people in the West don't seem to want to admit that the problem is Islam.
Yeah.
It's what that religion teaches. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, you're not going to be able to have a permanent peace in the Middle East. But, hey, I'll take a half dozen years.
Yeah.
I'll take 10 years of it if we can get it.
One thing that seemingly works in President Trump's favor here is the fact that he got as many Arab countries to, on paper, say, hey, Hamas, you got to agree to these terms. This is the best deal you're going to get. And I say that based on the audio I'm going to play here. Here again is a clip that begins with Trey Yingst in Egypt asking President Trump about phase two and whether Hamas may stay true to its word here in this deal. Clip four.
I'd like to talk about phase two of the deal. Already Hamas has said they're not willing to disarm. What leverage do you have over Hamas at this point?
We have a lot of leverage over them, and the countries that would back them or had backed them in the past are not going to be doing it any further. And I think they want peace also. You know, there have been 70,000 killed of them, and they rebuild and they regrow, but it's not easy. And I think they probably say, we don't want this anymore. Look, they agreed to this. They agreed to the terms. So they'd be going against the terms of the agreement. So I think it's going to work out fine. Maybe you're going to have to be a little bit strong about it, or maybe not. But they've agreed to disarm, and they've agreed to other things also.
Well, Fred, I think that on the part of some of these more stable Muslim countries, I'm thinking of, like mentioned, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, some of these other countries in the area, they don't want Hamas stirring up trouble on their streets either.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, why some of this pressure has been applied to Hamas by Arab countries. This is why the Muslim Brotherhood was kicked out of Egypt, because they didn't want stable governments. They didn't want any Muslim governments adopting any Western ideas. They didn't like the fact that Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia have a kind of a tentative kind of feel to their relationship with Israel, but it's fairly stable. They know Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Hezbollah, they don't want that. And so some of these countries, I think, want peace, because peace is the way you prosper.
Yes.
But if you are governed by this radical ideology, you don't want them in your streets stirring up trouble and overthrowing your government.
Yeah.
In Jordan or Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Trump has used his expertise, his experience as a business guy. He has even said, you know, tariffs work wonderful.
Right.
You know, and he has used business deals with the Qataris, I'm sure with Turkey, you know, with Qatar. Within 48 hours after the peace deal was initially announced last week, you had the Qataris making a deal with our Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, for a facility. They call it a Qatari facility. It's in Idaho, I believe it is. It's an Air Force base there.
Yeah.
And the Qataris are going to bring their F-15s and their pilots, and they're going to do exercises there. Well, you have to remember, the Qataris have, as I've mentioned, have been playing host to Hamas terrorist leaders. So businesses make strange bedfellows.
Yeah.
It really does. But I think Trump is making deals with these countries like Turkey. He said yesterday in his, I believe it was the Knesset speech, he'd like to do a deal with Iran.
Yeah.
You know, he feels Iran will come around because they're kind of isolated right now in the wake of the bombings, and he feels there's an opportunity. In fact, he kind of put out, come talk to us yesterday. So that's just the way Trump is. But I agree with you. You're not going to change the way that radical Islam thinks because of this deal. Mm-hmm. I think the word to use, I think, and Israel's way ahead on this, is vigilance.
Yeah.
Vigilance. Trust but verify.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody
That's
said
Ronald
that.
Reagan. Yeah.
Yes. Trust but verify. And that has to be the case.
Well, and I do think that some of these countries do have some leverage on groups like Hezbollah and Hamas because they've funded these radical groups. If you cut off the funds and you say, we're not giving you weapons, we're not giving you money to buy weapons, then you can't apply some pressure and you can weaken a group like Hamas. So we'll have to wait and see how this is going to work out. All right, Chris, so the president's been getting some applause.
Yes, from even Democrats. And I can verify, trust me, I'm a journalist.
Trust and verify.
I verified this. It's not AI pretending to be Hillary Clinton. Here is Hillary Clinton saying something positive about the man that defeated her almost 10 years ago in the election. Clip five.
It's a really significant first step, and I really commend President Trump and his administration, as well as Arab leaders in the region.
I woke up this morning and I came into work and I'd never imagined I would run a soundbite of Hillary Clinton saying, I commend President Trump. But I did.
Hey, Fred, kudos
to
Hillary Clinton. How many people thought they'd wake up to hear me say kudos to Hillary Clinton? I will say this. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit more of this. I'm talking about from both political parties. Mm-hmm. It's not always a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, the president, whatever the political parties, the opposition, saying, you know what, this is good. This is good for America. This is good for the Middle East. So I got to give a tip of the hat to Hillary Clinton for setting aside partisanship and saying what everybody knows to be true, and that however this winds up turning out in terms of how long a peace deal can stay in place, this is a good step, and she said so.
Yeah, and Bill Clinton, I'm not sure who did it first. Bill Clinton, I think, issued a statement yesterday congratulating Trump. However, on the opposite side of this, former President Biden and his Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, we have some audio of that?
We don't have the audio. But the reason being, they put out things on social media, which is how the kids do it now.
Yeah.
But I can read to you what they say. And I posted these. I took screenshots of their posts on X. Let's begin with President Joe Biden.
And you put them on our Facebook page?
I did. Yes. Okay. Let's begin with President Joe Biden. He said, the road to this deal was not easy. My administration worked relentlessly to bring hostages home, get relief to Palestinian civilians, and end the war. Secretary of State Blinken, under President Biden, said things like, President Trump adopted and built on the plan the Biden administration developed.
Okay, so let me take my own advice here. If that's true, if they did lay some groundwork, then they should be commended for doing so. Mm-hmm. However, I think President Trump has basically been, this goes with the Abraham Accords in his first administration and in this administration, he has put a lot of pressure on on Hamas and on the Middle East, and has worked to try to get deals with some of these Arab countries. And it's, to me, it's a little bit tacky to point at your own administration when nothing came of it and claim that the President Trump is standing on your shoulders. Maybe it's true. I don't know. But I've never heard any of the Biden administration officials talking about the kind of things that President Trump has pulled off.
Well, Biden was vice president under Barack Obama. Somebody mentioned in the last day or so, you know, Barack Obama delivered billions of dollars on pallets to the Iranians.
Sneaking it in the night.
Trump delivered bombs.
Yes. And which one worked better?
Which worked, yes. Yeah.
Those billions of dollars, I don't know what the percentage would be. Maybe nobody will know. But some of those billions of dollars that came from the United States went to Iran, supposedly releasing their cash that was frozen from the 1979 takeover by radicals in Iran. But some of that money wound up in Hamas's pockets.
That's right.
And Hezbollah.
Yes.
And Houthis and everything else, because Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism. So I preferred the bombs dropping. I think that got the message across a lot more than cash in the middle of the night. All right, we're going to take a short break. Folks, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hope you'll return. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, and helping them choose life and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson and Chris Woodward. And periodically, usually about once a quarter, we have a guest on, Dr. Walter Wendler, who's president of West Texas A&M University. And it is our privilege to have Dr. Wendler on the show with us again today. Dr. Wendler, welcome back to Today's Issues.
Thank you, Ed, and it's always a pleasure to visit with you gentlemen. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Walter, we wanted to talk to you about faith and reason on campus. A lot of Americans have had their attention focused on college campuses because of what happened to Charlie Kirk about a month or so ago. And a lot of things going on in terms of anti-Semitism on campus, but just the regular run-of-the-mill struggle that people, young people of faith have on many of our college and university campuses. So let us know what you think is going on college campuses and why it is important to tell Christian young people that both faith and reason can exist on our college and university campuses.
Yeah, pleased to do that, Ed. And in fact, there does seem to be almost a mandate, and I think universities do it sometimes intentionally and sometimes unintentionally, ask students to check their faith at the campus gate. And, you know, I've told people, I always reveal my Christian faith and what it means to me to others so that they may calibrate the things that I say. And if they so desire, test it against God's word. But I believe I should be honest about who I am, because who I am in my heart and my soul affects how I think and the things that I say and do, even as an academic. That these things are connected, and I think universities go to great extent to convince students that they could be disconnected. C.S. Lewis said one time that if you follow that line of reasoning, a student may have a full head. And this is a rough quote, may have a full head, but an empty chest, talking about their heart and their soul. And Lewis is right, as usual. We can't expect people to separate their faith. And I think being honest about what your faith life is, whatever it is, you know, it's important to your development as a human being that's created in the image of God. And if you don't have any faith, if you've got faith in government, like so many of the people you all talk about that seem to demonstrate faith in government rather than faith in Christ, and don't get me wrong, you all talk about that plenty too, but you know, there are people that just think that the government's going to solve all their problems, or some other belief system, science is going to solve all their problems. My wife and I watched something on the news this morning about a teacher in a public school, and that this intention is good, but teaching students to have, in a sense, faith in themselves. You know, they can do whatever they want to do and so on and so forth. And sometimes that stuff is misguided. Now, when it's in Christ, in my mind, because the Bible tells me this, it's never misguided. And I think universities do a disservice to students to act like these two spheres of life, the mind and I'll say the soul, cannot coexist and do not inform each other. And I think that's, I think it's very important. Isaac Newton himself, who is probably one of the greatest scientists that ever lived, said, and I quote, "There are more sure marks of authenticity in the Bible than in any profane history." And Horace Greeley said, "It's impossible to enslave mentally or socially a Bible-reading people. The principles of the Bible are the groundwork of human freedom." And, these gentlemen are pretty thoughtful people, and they recognize this connection between faith and reason. And no matter what contemporary higher education does to try to separate these things, it's a disservice to students. And I fear even sometimes that at Christian universities, this sort of isolation exists, this sort of, two ways of seeing things. And I believe there's only one, and we have to recognize that and work at integrating how we think from a faith perspective and how we think from a rational perspective, how these two things work together.
Dr. Wendler,
I think you see it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fred here. We've often done stories through the years here about, we talk to people like George Barna and others who talk about, it seems a lot of young people who grow up in churches, when they get to that university environment where there are a lot of challenges to what they've been taught, they're not prepared to make the argument or as I think you're noting, they're afraid. Can churches, can mom and dads do a better job of preparing their kids for the environment that they're going to be exposed to when they go to university? Is that the responsibility of churches and moms and dads?
I couldn't agree more, and I'd put it in this order: first moms and dads, and then churches. But I mean, they're neck and neck. It's a photo finish on that. But the fact of the matter is they can, and I think encouraging students to be, would-be college students to hold on to their faith. And, you know, we have many Christian ministries on our campus from many different denominations. And I always encourage students to get involved with those. But I also say don't rely just on those. Find a local church. Local churches, to me, are the foundation of the New Testament. And I could argue that temples are the foundation of the Old Testament. But local churches are incredibly important. And if a student moves far away from home where they can't attend church where they were raised, if they were raised in a Christian home, find a local congregation. Don't just rely on student ministries. And by the way, that is not in any way to disparage the ministerial works that occur, within Baptist Student Ministries or Wesley Foundation or the Catholic groups or the Church of Christ groups. I'm just thinking of some down the street from me, that pay attention to these things. We've got Pentecostal groups, there's all kinds of groups, and I encourage that, but I also encourage local worship. If a student really wants to engage a faith community, ultimately that should be the greatest satisfaction in the life of a believing parent, that when the student matures and is out on their own as an adult, they maintain their relationship through Christ or with Christ through God's word. They maintain that relationship, and they do that on their own. And I think what happens is, I mentioned this to somebody once in a conversation about this, many Christian students who are very faithful in their church, one of the things they're taught is a respect for authority. They go into a classroom with a faculty member who feels like their greatest responsibility is to rattle the cage. And they do that, and the student doesn't know how to respond except to be respectful. And, you know, we just all witnessed and watched the passing of Charlie Kirk. You can be respectful and be rigorously intellectual and reasonable and make very cogent arguments, but you have to have, you know, you have to have a grip on what your faith life is. And I think many students do. And then not be afraid to put it out there for people to hear and study and think about with you. And, you know, in this little piece I wrote, I think I sent to you guys, Henry Fosdick said, man cannot live without faith because the primary requisite in life's adventure is courage, and the sustenance of courage is faith. Mm-hmm. And if faith and reason are connected, I would argue that faith and courage are also connected. I think we have to be courageous, and if Charlie Kirk taught us anything, he would have taught us, if we watched and listened, to be courageous with our faith. And I don't mean to beat somebody over the head with it, but I mean to be courageous and thoughtful about it and be willing to entertain discussions about it. I think that's very, very important.
Our guest has been Dr. Walter Wendler. He's president of West Texas A&M University. Dr. Wendler, you make great points here. If some of our listeners want to access some more of your writing or anything like that, where could they find it? Is there any of that available?
Oh, yes, sir. As a matter of fact, I write op-eds every week in local newspapers, and some not local, some national newspapers. And they are all posted on Walter Wendler, WALTERWENDLER.com. And if you go there, you'll find 800 opinion pieces Wow. that I've written about higher education. And I've been doing that for almost two decades now. And another place to go to find out about West Texas A&M University, because it is not a typical university. We've established on campus the Hill Institute, and we have on our board, our advisory board, Dr. Ben Carson is on that advisory board. Larry Arn from Hillsdale College, I know you know him. He sure. is on that advisory board. And I could go through and name all six, and they're very influential people who are steadfast about what's important about higher education. And by the way, I would just announce or let you know that Ben Carson will be speaking on our campus on October 27th. We're not going to live stream it, but in all likelihood, we will post it to our website, which is West Texas. Somebody can access our website by entering WTAMU.edu, and you can get to our website. And when you get there, you can search for Hill Institute and find out what we're doing with that. But I think it is powerful. And obviously, we're a public university, but we are not taking any public funds for the Hill Institute. And I told the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, when he was here, you know, he said, is there any way I can help? And I said, well, I don't want any money, because if we get money from you, that means then the discussion about what we do becomes larger. And we want to make right. sure it's focused on the things that we believe are essential and have been neglected in higher education for probably since the 60s and maybe before.
All right. So, Dr. Wendler, let me give you an opportunity. If there are parents listening right now whose kids are on the verge of having to choose a college or a university, I want you to make a pitch to those Christian parents and make the case that if their kids are young people with a faith in Jesus Christ, they will not be harmed by going to a public university, West Texas A&M University. In fact, they will find plenty to do that will strengthen their faith. Go ahead and make your pitch, sir.
Okay, I'll do it, Ed. You pretty much just did it. There are plenty of things to do. And by the way, I will tell you that we're not 100%. I mean, there are people, we're like a church. We've even got disagreements here, about what we're doing and why we're doing it. But this is a very thoughtful university. We are in one of the reddest congressional districts in the United States of America. And we are the most conservative district that's home to a university in the state of Texas. There are 38. And our values here, Ronnie Jackson is our U.S. congressman. These conservative values, and I tell people, even people that disagree with me, and there are plenty, but I tell them, look, we need to serve the folks that call West Texas home, and I have great confidence in the value systems of these people. They produce a lot of energy. They produce 30% of the beef that's consumed in America. This is a very important region in our state, and the people that do this work have conservative values. And if you went to my website, walterwemmer.com, and typed in conservative, you'll see a lot of writings about this. I don't apologize for holding values that are similar to those folks who live in West Texas. Right. And I'll tell you, I'm not from West Texas. You guys have already figured that out. I'm from 35 miles out of New York City on the north shore of Long Island. But I somehow escaped that and ended up at Texas A&M. And when I got off the bus in College Station, Texas, I said, Lord, what have I done? I looked around. This was 1970, and I thought, holy smokes, what have I done? But anyway, it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened. And I've been back to New York. Mary and I, both from New York. We've both been back to visit after we got married, but that's all. Okay. We've been in Texas most of our adult lives. And these values, especially these panhandle values, are very important. And I think there's a lot of sympathy for those values on our campus. It's not monolithic.
Right.
It's not monolithic. But it is. There are a lot of places where students can find a connection to their faith life that they were raised with. And by the way, if they weren't raised in the faith or if they've wandered away from it, I think there's a lot of opportunities through the various ministries on our campus to reconnect and find out how vital that can be, not just from a spiritual sense, but also from an intellectual and rational sense, that you can learn and be thoughtful and intelligent about what you do without having to apologize for being a Christian.
It's
one of the things that, what bugs me about some of the Christian universities where they almost apologize for being
right.
Christian universities,
Right.
Anyway.
All right.
I'm wondering.
No, hey, listen, it sounds like you got some preach in you, brother. There's nothing wrong with that. Dr. Wendler, thank you so much for being on with us again, and thank you for the work that you guys are doing there in West Texas. Again, folks, West Texas A&M University. And check out Dr. Wendler's writings. 800 opinion pieces. That's a lot of opinion. Dr. Wendler, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for being
on
with us.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay, thank you for having me. Okay. Bye.
I think the bottom line is Amarillo ain't Austin.
Yes. No, that's right. I love listening to Dr. Wendler.
Yes.
And that, by the way, folks, that was the voice of Dr. Walter Wendler, president of West Texas A&M University. It sounds great what they're doing there at that university. I did not know. I detected some accent. I didn't know he was from New York.
What a contrast.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I like to joke with people that I meet from New York that we have a Brooklyn, Mississippi, which is an actual place. It's like, you should visit sometime.
We have Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. We've got Atlanta.
Yeah.
We've got all kinds of places.
Yeah. All right. Let's continue on, Chris.
Man, I mean, it's like, it's tough to pick, but I'm going to say this. New York Attorney General Letitia James made her first public appearance last night at a political rally for Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani. He's the guy running for mayor and by most polls appears to be leading that race for mayor. And Letitia James appeared at a political rally last night where she endorsed Mamdani, saying that, you know, she described him as her little brother. But she went on to basically say that Donald Trump and other critics aren't going to take me from my position and stuff like that. Don't take my word for it. Clip 7.
You see, I know what it feels like to be attacked for just doing your job. But I also know what it feels like to overcome adversity. And so I stand on solid rock. And I will not bow. I will not break. I will not bend. I will not capitulate. I will not give in. I will not give up. You come for me, you gotta come to all of us. All of us. Every single one of us. We're all in this together.
Well, okay, so that kind of had the cadence of a black preacher.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what she was kind of drawing on.
Yeah.
And listen, Letitia James hopes all those people are going to stand in front of her. The charges that she faces is a very serious one.
Oh, yeah.
And for someone who came into her political her heyday here, promising to get Donald Trump before she was even in office.
Right.
That's right.
And could look at all the evidence.
Yeah.
She's got some nerve.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, the needle is pegged on hypocrisy in that speech. Because, as you say, when she was running for office to be Attorney General of New York, she made speeches. I'm going to get them.
Yeah.
Speaking of Donald Trump, which is what she did. With a very bogus charge,
right,
by the way. I think everybody remembers that, as far as, you know, it's something about overvaluing Trump's properties. And even the banks didn't have a problem with that.
There was no actual victim here.
No victim in that. However, what she's being charged with is a house that she purchased. And when she filled out a loan for purchasing a house in Virginia, she said it was going to be her personal dwelling.
Right.
And it wasn't. And there's tax advantages to all of that.
Right.
So there's the IRS and fraud is in her future.
Yeah. And of course, she's allegedly committed these crimes.
Right.
We do want to say that. Mm-hmm. But that's why I mentioned this is serious. This is a serious crime that she's being charged with. And she could wind up in prison.
Yes.
But, I get a kick out of politicians of any stripe who stand up there and say, we're all in this together. Mm. If they want to get me, they've got to go through you. And if I'm in the crowd, I'm going, no, they don't.
Nope.
You're on your own on this. Chris,
right.
Do you have an opinion on this?
I concur.
You concur. All right.
I want to mention this real quick. Charlie Kirk is being awarded the Medal of Freedom today. Today would have been his 32nd birthday, and everybody knows the story. Charlie Kirk was assassinated while at a Turning Point USA event in Utah Valley University back September 10th in Utah. And he's being given the Medal of Freedom, which is something President Trump announced weeks ago. And somebody that's been filling in for Charlie at Turning Point USA events is Michael Knowles of The Daily Wire. Michael Knowles was a guest on Fox and Friends First this morning, and he thought it was very fitting that Charlie Kirk would be getting the Medal of Freedom. Clip 6.
I think it's totally fitting. You know, the Presidential Medal of Freedom is the nation's highest civilian honor. And Charlie really embodied that true type of freedom. In fact, he was famously wearing the Freedom T-shirt. A lot of times today, we think freedom is just the ability to do whatever we want. That's not really what it is. Lord Acton tells us, freedom is not the ability to do what we wish, but the right to do what we ought to do. In other words, it's not just losing our inhibitions. It is discipline grounded in the truth. I don't think anybody embodied that more perfectly than Charlie Kirk in our whole generation. And I think it's totally fitting that he is given this great honor.
You know, Fred, that's a good, I like Michael Knowles.
Yes.
He's very articulate, very smart. very rational, reasonable in debates, conducts himself well. That's an excellent tie-in to the medal that Charlie Kirk is will be getting posthumously. But it is a great point that Michael Knowles is making. And too many people in the West, not just the United States, but the West, think freedom is just the ability to do whatever you want without any sense of responsibility, without any sense of what is good for the community. Good points that he's making.
Well, Charlie Kirk fought for that freedom, fought for the freedom to tell the truth, because we know on university campuses, not only are you discouraged from going against the stream of thinking that's so secular stream of thinking that's so prevalent, but he fought against the effort to shut down any opposition to the thinking that's on our university campuses, and particularly to Christian students, much like our guest that we just had on, Dr. Walter Wendler. Do not be afraid. One of the things Dr. Walter was saying is, you don't check your freedom at the door. And yes, Christians are taught to be respectful of people in authority, but that doesn't mean that they get up there and they can say whatever they want and you're not allowed to disagree.
Right.
I'm sorry. You are allowed to disagree respectfully. And that's what Charlie Kirk stood for. Do not be afraid. I hope there are many Charlie Kirks that are in the pipeline right now.
I think so.
Coming along.
Meanwhile, President Joe Biden.
Right.
Who did he give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to?
This is another reason why people say elections matter. Before he left office, Joe Biden gave George Soros, of all people, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yes.
From George Soros to Charlie Kirk.
Well, that speaks volumes.
Yes.
The kind of people you give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to, there I can say it, indicates what your worldview is. George Soros, I can't think of a worse individual to give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to. But I'll tell you this, elections do have consequences. Mm-hmm. And we are free in this country.
Amen. So
if Joe Biden wants to give that medal to George Soros, he has the freedom to do it, and we have the freedom to disagree. All right, we're going to take a short 5-minute break for news. And when we come back, Steve Paisley Jordahl will be in the house.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.